to be here. I want to talk to you today about kind of a defining moment. You know, I think every life has defining moments. And by that I don't mean like in the Andy Warhol sense of everybody has those 15 minutes of fame. I'm not sure everybody actually has 15 minutes of fame, but you know, they talk about that. It's not even that time in life when you're just really at your very best, when you're at your peak. My dad was my first mentor in ministry. He was a pastor. He's 82 years old now, and has been in ministry for, 60 years. And he told me one time, he said, you know, a preacher is in his prime for about 15 minutes. You know, you're a young preacher, you're a young preacher, you're a young preacher, and then all of a sudden, one day you wake up and you're not a young preacher anymore, you're an old preacher. So there's like 15 minutes there where you're really at your prime. You hope it happens on a Sunday morning, right? When you're actually preaching. I think mine, unfortunately, happened about 25 years ago on a Tuesday afternoon, and nobody even saw it. You know, but that's not really even what I'm thinking about when I think about the defining moments. Some people have these moments where just everything intersects, and there's a huge need, a dramatic need, and they have the right set of skills and the willingness to act in a particular situation where they get to be a hero and their life is forever kind of connected to that event, and their name always brings up that event, and that event always reminds us of their name. Like the name, for example, Chelsea Burnett Sullenberger. Do you know that name? How about if I said Captain Sully? Now, that rings a bell with a few more people, but if I said Captain Sully, who was the pilot of United Airlines Flight 1459 that took flight from JFK Airport in New York on the 9th of July in 2009 and immediately ran into a flock of Canadian geese. I don't know that it was significant that they were Canadian geese, but they were big old geese that caused catastrophic engine failure on the airplane. And Captain Sully happened to be a guy who had extensive training in two areas as a pilot. One is a glider pilot when he had been in the Air Force. And then also he had learned to make water landings. And he was able to act immediately and land that plane with all 155 people on board safely right on the Hudson River while all of Manhattan looked on. Now, you remember that story, probably. A lot of you do. I'm seeing some recognition. And forever, you think of, maybe you saw the movie, right? Captain Sully is the guy who landed that plane on the Hudson River and saved 155 lives. That was sort of a defining moment, but not even that's exactly the kind of defining moment I'm thinking about today. I'm thinking about those moments that come in transitions in life, and sometimes they're transitions that are of due to circumstances, transitions that are of somebody else's making, or sometimes they're transitions of your own making. At a moment when you just decide, you have a moment where you realize everything that has happened in my life up to this point has brought me to this place, and I have to make some decisions about who I'm going to be from this point forward, what kind of a person I'm going to be, what kind of a purpose I'm going to pursue in my life. And the decision I make and the patterns that I set at this moment are going to be definitive for everything that my life ends up standing for. That's the kind of defining moment that I want to think about today, and it's a defining moment that could happen anytime. It could happen right now in any of our lives. And it's the kind of moment that we find in Joshua chapter 1. And that's the text I want to look at today. What is going on in Joshua chapter 1? Let's sort of think through where we are in the big story of God. Joshua 1 happens right at the end, right after the first five books, the Pentateuch of the Old Testament. that have kind of told us the story of the beginning of what God is doing in the world, creation. I love you guys' banners here, kind of spelling out the story. Creation. God created the world. There was created man and woman to have dominion over the earth, and they sinned, and everything was changed from that point. And God begins this long journey of redeeming the world and redeeming humanity. And it has a lot to do with his choice of Abraham and his family to create for himself a great nation. And they go down into Egypt, and they come out of Egypt, out of slavery, and go through the wilderness. He gives them the law. They get to the promise, the land that he's promised Abraham, and then they turn back and end up wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years as a whole generation dies off there. And then we come to Joshua chapter 1. Moses has been leading the people through all these years, and now Moses is dead. And it's time for Joshua, his understudy, his apprentice, to step up and take leadership of this people. Now, we tend to think of Joshua as kind of a young guy, because apparently he was younger than Moses. But at this point, he's been around for a while. He might be as old as like 80 years old. He was an adult when they left Egypt to begin with. And he remembers all of those things. He remembers being a slave in Egypt. He remembers the plagues that God sent to deliver him from Egypt. He remembers that final plague of the death of the firstborn and the Passover and the way God passed over all of Israel, and how after that experience, the Egyptians sent them out and even gave them all kinds of stuff to take with them and said, just go. But then he remembers also walking through the Red Sea on dry land and seeing that same sea come up and swallow up all the Egyptian army that was pursuing them. He remembers Mount Sinai. He'd been there. He had climbed that mountain with Moses and seen the fire and the smoke and the law that God sent. He remembers God's judgment in the wilderness as people had rebelled against him and had wanted to go back. He remembers all the ways that God had provided and blessed throughout all that time. He remembers coming up to the promised land and going in and scouting it out. And 10 out of 12 said, no, we can't do it. And the people turning around, he remembered all those years as one by one, all of the people of his generation, all of his old lifelong friends, one by one died in the wilderness except for him and his friend Caleb, who had both said, let's go in and take it. He remembers all of those things, but even more than that, he remembers God's promises to Abraham when he had said, I'm going to give to your descendants this land. And for 600-700 years, they had been waiting, they had been expecting, they had been anticipating, knowing that one day God was going to give them this particular land. And now was the time, and now was his time. God was calling him to step up and lead his people to claim that land that he was giving to them as an inheritance. Defining moment. You know, I think we all have those moments. Maybe not exactly like that one, but we each have a moment where we have to stop and think about, what is it that God has determined that he wants to do with my life? What does he want to do through me in my world around me? Every day has the potential to be that kind of moment where we have to decide, will I be that person that God has created me and prepared me to be, or will I turn back? It's a moment to decide to become what he's made us to be. And this is what we find here in Joshua chapter 1. Now, I want to read this chapter. It's about 18 verses. And one of the cool things about Old Testament stories is that they give you some clues about what it's really about. And one of the ways that the Old Testament writers do this is by putting in some phrases that they repeat over and over again. So I want you to listen as we read and try and figure out what is the phrase that's really got arrows pointing to it that we need to pay attention to today when it comes to this defining moment in Joshua's life. And there'll be a quiz afterwards. I'm a professor. I can't help it. So Joshua chapter 1. It says, after the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now you and all the people prepare to cross over the Jordan to the land I am giving to the Israelites. I have given you every place where the sole of your foot treads, just as I promised Moses. Your territory will be from the wilderness and Lebanon to the great river, the Euphrates River, all the land of the Hittites, and west to the Mediterranean Sea. No one will be able to stand against you as long as you live. I will be with you, just as I was with Moses. I will not leave you or abandon you. Be strong and courageous, for you will distribute the land I swore to their fathers to give them as an inheritance. Above all, be strong and very courageous to observe carefully the whole instruction my servant Moses commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or the left so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of instruction must not depart from your mouth. You are to meditate on it day and night so that you may carefully observe everything written in it, for then you will prosper and succeed in whatever you do. Haven't I commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get provisions ready for yourselves, for within 3 days you will be crossing the Jordan to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving to you to inherit. Joshua said to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Now, these are the tribes who already had their land because it was on this side of the Jordan, the side that they were already on. And so he's going to remind them of a promise, a pledge that they had made to Moses. He says, remember what Moses, the Lord's servant, commanded you when he said, the Lord your God will give you rest, and he will give you this land. Your wives, dependents, and livestock may remain in the land Moses gave you on this side of the Jordan. But your best soldiers must cross over in the battle formation ahead of your brothers and help them until the Lord gives your brothers rest as he has given you. And they too possess the land the Lord your God is giving them. You may then return to the land of your inheritance and take possession of what Moses, the Lord's servant, gave you on the east side of the Jordan. They answered Joshua, everything you have commanded us, we will do. And everywhere you send us, we will go. We will obey you just as we obeyed Moses in everything. Certainly the Lord your God will be with you as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your order and does not obey your words and all that you command him will be put to death. Above all, be strong and courageous. Okay, now's the quiz. What's this about? What's the main phrase that you heard in this verse? Be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. It's two Hebrew words that are almost mean exactly the same thing. In fact, sometimes the word that's translated here, be strong, is translated be courageous, and sometimes in other places, the Hebrew word here for be courageous is translated be strong. They're that close together. But together, they have this kind of combination of being resolute, being courageous, being prepared, preparing yourself for the task before you, prepare your hands for action, prepare your heart for endurance and for facing whatever trial. Whatever God was saying to Joshua, what I am calling you to do will require you to be bold, will require you to be strong, it will require you to be courageous. You need to be strong and courageous. Seems to be the theme here. The question for Joshua, and I think the question for us, that's always important in these defining moments in our lives is, what is this courage? And where does it come from? And how do we find it? How do we discover it? We need courage to pursue the blessing of the mission of being a blessing to our city, to the people around us, to speak the gospel into the lives of people that God places in our path and that He places in our circle of influence, to take the next step in our walk with God, from disciple to disciple maker, from a person who's seeking to a person who believes and begins to walk in a life of discipleship. We need courage for those kinds of things, to live on mission in a world that doesn't necessarily value or believe in the mission that we are called to live. What's this courage? And where does it come from? Well, for one thing, I think something we can settle that it's not is that courage is not the absence of fear. The fact that God says to Joshua three times, and then the people say to him another time at the end of this passage, "Be strong and courageous," implies that there is some fear involved. God knows there's some fear involved in Joshua's situation. For one thing, this passage begins by talking about Moses. The first person who's mentioned in the text is Moses, the servant of the Lord. And he gives him a title, the servant of the Lord. Every time throughout the book of Joshua that it remembers Moses and calls Moses' name, it calls Moses the servant of the Lord. Joshua is just Joshua. doesn't say Joshua the servant of the Lord. Doesn't say Joshua the great commander. Just says Joshua. Joshua has all of his life lived in the shadow of this great man. And he continues to live in the shadow of this great man as long as he lives. Finally, eventually, Joshua does get to be called the servant of the Lord. But it doesn't happen until Judges, when Joshua's already dead. It seems like the Israelites their leaders were always sort of on probation, until they died. And then they'd look back and say, yep, servant of the Lord. He finished well. So Joshua had this sort of built-in sort of pressure to succeed, but not only that, he knew how difficult this task would be. He had been walking with this people for all these 40 years as Moses kind of understudy, and he knew how hard it would be. I was reading this text one time aloud in class in the seminary, and we have a student there named Cliff who's from Barbados. And I got to that part where it says, the people say, "Just as we obeyed Moses, we will always obey you." And Cliff just started laughing out loud. I said, "Cliff, what's so funny?" He said, "Hey, man, how they obeyed, Moses? It was, they didn't obey Moses at all. They rebelled against him constantly. That wasn't any comfort to him that they said they would obey him." He knew how difficult this task was going to be. The whole purpose of this chapter is to clarify that this is Joshua's moment. This is when it's all on the line. This is when he is called to step up and to fill this role in the history of God's people that they've been anticipating for all of this time. The pressure was enormous. Fear is not something that was absent. Fear was assumed. There's no absence of fear. God, is God asking you to do something that scares you? Good. It should scare you. The fact that we're afraid reminds us, it just means that we understand the gravity of the situation. We understand how important it is. I teach preaching, and occasionally a student will come up to me and say, "Man, I preached several times, but I still get really nervous." And I say, "Good for you. You should be. This is important stuff." And the fact that you're nervous about it means that you understand just how important it is. Courage is not the absence of fear. Fear is a good thing. It means that we have a grasp on how important the task really is. Well, maybe courage is self-confidence in the face of fear. Joshua had every reason to be confident. He was really the man who was most qualified for the job. He had been the military leader of Israel for years. He had been the commander of the Lord's army since way back in Exodus 17 when they had that scrap with the Amalekites. He had never had anything but victory in all of his battles. He was a great military commander. He had been Moses' assistant since his youth. He had been there on Mount Sinai and experienced the presence of God. He had always sat outside the doorway of the tent of meeting when Moses went in to be with God. He had been there sort of eavesdropping on Moses' conversations with God that whole time. He had been one of the two original spies who had actually gone in and said, yeah, this can, they're giants in the land and it's going to be difficult and all of that, but God can do this. He can accomplish it. He was one of the ones who had the faith. And so because of that, he was one of the only two of that whole generation left. Just he and Caleb were left out of all of that entire generation, which meant that he was older, wiser, more experienced than anybody else other than Caleb in the whole nation. Moses himself had endorsed him. God himself had commissioned him right there in front of all of the people of Israel. But God didn't say to Joshua here in this chapter when he talks to him about his call and what it is for what he has for him to do. He didn't say to Joshua, Joshua, you've got this. You have all the experience you need. You have the gifts you need. You have the talents that you need. You are the right man for the job. This is what you've been preparing for since you were just a pup. Trust your instincts. Trust your experience. Trust your resume. You can be confident in the face of this great challenge and this great fear. All of those things are true, but that's not what God said to him. And it's also true that God doesn't waste anything in our lives. Every experience that we have, whether good or bad, God will use. Every bit of training that we get, God will use. Every gift that we have, every talent, every ability that we bring to him, God will use. But the truth is, God's call and his purpose and what he wants to do in our lives is always beyond our abilities and our training and our experience. That's just the nature of it. God calls us into something that is bigger than we are. And our confronting fear cannot rest on our abilities and what we've done. Well, another possibility is that courage comes from the community, from being encouraged by others. I like this conversation that Joshua has in verses 10 through 16 with the tribes of Reuben and Gad and half tribe of Manasseh, and he talks to them and he says to them, you know, it's time for us to go and you're going to have to go with us and remember what Moses said, and they are encouraged and they are encouraged to him. And it's true that a good confident leader will impart kind of confidence to his followers, and he secures this commitment of these three tribes. But the response now was different from what it had been 40 years before. They said, we're ready. We're ready to follow you. And he must have been encouraged by that. They were encouraged by him. And it's true that courage is often contagious. It is contagious. That's one of the reasons we gather week after week as God's people, to encourage one another. In our church, we like to have God stories where somebody shares something that God has done, or some door that God has opened, or some way that God has given them opportunity to share the gospel, and those kinds of things. We love to have those kinds of stories because we're all encouraged by one another. But the fact is that we don't get the courage that we need for God's purpose and mission in our life from other people any more than we can get that courage from ourselves and our own qualifications, or from just trying to blot out fear. The fact is, it's one of the marks of our brokenness that we try to get courage from ourselves and from other people and from just ignoring our fear. That's actually a mark of sin in our lives, sort of an extension in our lives, that we make an idol of our resume and our abilities and our training and our gifts, and we rely on those instead of placing our reliance where we need to put it. So where do we get courage? Well, you know where it is. And you probably noticed actually in the passage itself what God says to him. He says in verse 5, "Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you." And then later on in verse 9, he says, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." And again in verse 17, as people speak to him and encourage him, he says, "Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses." And then they say, because of this, "Be strong and courageous." You know, the words "be strong and courageous" appear about 10 times in the Old Testament, that phrase. Of those 10 times, 7 of them relate to Joshua. 4 in this chapter and 4 back in, and 3 back in Deuteronomy chapter 31, where Moses says to him, "Be strong and courageous," when he's about to tell him, when he's telling him it's almost your time. And then he says it to him again in front of the people when he says, "This is going to be your leader. He must be strong and courageous. Joshua, be strong and courageous." And then God says it to him when God speaks to Joshua in that same chapter and says, "Be strong and courageous." And then it appears a couple of times in 2 Chronicles when David is passing the torch to Solomon, and he tells his son Solomon, when he's telling him he's going to build the temple and all of that, he says, "You be strong and courageous." And then it occurs another time down a little bit later in 2 Chronicles when there's a situation where the people need to be encouraged, and Hezekiah is rallying the troops to face up to the Assyrians, and he tells them to be strong and courageous. You know that every single time the phrase "be strong and courageous" is mentioned throughout the Old Testament, in all of those instances, every single time it's accompanied by the promise, "The Lord your God will be with you." Every single time. The only source for our confidence, for our courage to do what God is calling us to do and to be, is that God himself is with us. It's the very presence of God. Now, why does that make a difference? I think it makes a difference, for one thing, because when we realize that God is with us, we're reminded that this is his story. It's not our story. We're getting to be a part of his story, a part of what he's doing in the world. Now, Joshua had a huge role to play, but ultimately, this was not the story of Joshua's life. This was a story of what God was doing to redeem his people and ultimately to redeem all of humanity through this people. And Joshua had his part to play in God's story. We in our church like to talk about gospel movement as one of kind of the things we talk about in our path of discipleship. And what that involves is just stepping into the work that God is already doing in the world and being aware that God is the one who's at work here. If I need to go have coffee with a friend and share my faith with them or share the gospel with them, tell them my story, that's stepping into what God is doing there. or if I need to go out and serve someone and help a, you know, we have one of our communities is recently helping an elderly widow lady move her stuff from one house to another. That's stepping into God's story and what he's doing in that life, in the life of that person's family. God is the one who's at work. When we realize God is with us, we're reminded that it's his story, it's not ours. And also we realize that it's not our skill and our strength and our savvy or our wisdom that's going to bring things to pass, but it's God's power. The gospel is his power for salvation to everyone who believes. And Joshua had experienced enough in his life. He had walked through the Red Sea, and he had experienced the fire and the smoke on Mount Sinai, and he had seen the manna fall from heaven to feed this multitude of people day after day after day, year after year, through all the course of the wilderness wanderings. He knew that it wasn't his resume, but it was God's power that was going to conquer this land that they were going into. We can't be qualified enough for God's work. I'm all about training. I spend my life training people. That's a passion of my life. That's part of my part in God's story. But I know that the students that I have in my classroom, they're going to need a whole lot more than any training I could ever give to them. They're going to need God's presence. It's not my training the training that I give to them that's going to equip them and empower them for what God is wanting to do. It is the presence of God in their lives every step of the way. Another thing kind of related to that I think this reminds us of, that God's presence is with us, is that we realize that the world around us is not going to be transformed by our example, but it's by God's power and God's spirit. And these people were encouraged not because Joshua was leading. He was a great leader, but the reason they were encouraged, the reason they were saying, yes, we're ready now to do this, wasn't that Joshua was leading, but that they knew that God had spoken and he had called Joshua to this task. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about him. So here's the main thing I want you to hear from this text this morning. The courage is not about how little you fear the challenge. Courage is about how much you trust God. It's not about how you can say, I've got that. I'm confident. I can overcome that. It's not about that at all. That's not courage. Courage is about, do I trust God enough to move forward? Do I trust that he will do what he will do? Are you afraid? Don't try to overcome your fear. Fear is a good thing. Trust God. Do you feel qualified? Maybe you should get over it. Do you feel unqualified? Great. Trust God. Do you feel really supported? Have a great community around you? Well, be thankful for that. Do you feel alone in what God is calling you to do? Well, that's okay. Trust God, not the people around you. Trust God. But there's one more piece to this, I think, that's important for us to notice. And you notice down in verses 7 and 8, he says, above all, be strong and very courageous to observe carefully the whole instruction my servant Moses commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you will have success wherever you go. This is what he's supposed to do with his courage. This is what he's supposed to have courage to do. And it's not what God gives him is not a battle plan. It's not a military strategy. It's not next steps in what he's in accomplishing the task. what God gives him is his word and his instruction. He says, you be strong and courageous to obey me, to order your life according to what I've told you and what I've told Moses that you should do. You order your life that way. So courage is not a matter of how little you fear the challenge. It's a matter of how much you trust God. But another thing we need to understand is you don't show how much you trust God by being confident. You show how much you trust God by being obedient. It's not a matter of just saying, I'm confident because God is with me. The question is not how confident you look or how confident you feel. The question is, how obediently do you walk? How faithfully do you fulfill what he's commanded you to do? If you trust God supremely, you will obey God completely. And the moment you get to the point where you think you can handle it, you know, I think I got this, that's probably the point where you're also going to start cutting corners and being less obedient, less meticulously obedient to God. Courage is not about how little you fear their challenge, but how much you trust God. And trusting God is not about being confident, it's about being obedient. You might say, well, that's easy for Joshua. He had walked through the Red Sea. He had eaten manna for 40 years. I often think they must have gotten really tired of eating manna for 40 years. But he had experienced God's provision in all those spectacular ways. What have I seen? You know, you haven't experienced what Joshua experienced, but you know, you and I have actually experienced more. You know, Joshua's original name was Hosea, which means salvation. And Moses had changed his name to Yeshua, which means God saves. And the Greek transliteration of that in the Greek version of the Old Testament is Jesus. When the angel came to Mary and said, you're going to have a son and you're going to call him Jesus, the word was Jesus, the name. Probably Mary didn't speak Greek to Mary. Probably it was in Hebrew or Aramaic, and the name would have been Yeshua. Joshua. Joshua experienced God's presence and led God's people into the promised land because God was with him. Jesus, the new Joshua, was God's presence, is God's presence physically on earth. And through his life and his death, and his resurrection, he opened up a way, not just for this particular extended family, but for all of humanity, all of us, all nations and tribes, not just to enter in and possess a little plot of ground in the Middle East, but to enter into God's universal, eternal kingdom, his eternal kingdom. He has provided that way for us. And Joshua may have experienced the Red Sea, but we have experienced the reality of the cross and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so, after he had done that, he stood on a hillside with his disciples. And just like God gave to Joshua a big task, he gave to them a big task. He said, you go and you make disciples of all the nations. That's scary. That was scary for those 12 men standing there. But then he gave them a promise. And what was the promise? It was the same promise God gave to Joshua. I will be with you. even to the ends of the earth. So, courage is not a matter of how little you fear the task. It's about how much you trust God. And how much you trust God, we see not in your confidence, but in your obedience to Him. So what is God asking you to do today? What step is He asking you to take? Who's He calling you to share your story with? Who's He calling you to make a to share the gospel with, to go through and just explain the gospel to them? How is He wanting you to stand up and be His person in the place where He has put you? Every moment has the potential to be a defining moment. This is a moment. This day is a day that God calls every one of us to define what the rest of our lives is going to be, to make the choices, to set the patterns of what the rest of our life is going to be. And if we're going to follow the path that He has for us, it's going to take courage, strength and courage. And He says to us, be strong and courageous. And courage, not a matter of not fearing the task, it's about trusting God. And trusting God is not about being confident. It's about being obedient. Let's pray.